Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 86, Smorgasbord, April 2017. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, especially you folks that like to get in the kitchen and try new things and have fun and feed your family and friends. And today I've got another of my little bit of everything type episodes, which I'm calling a smorgasbord, which if you're familiar with the term, it's kind of a spread. You know, you might have different sorts of cold cuts and meats and cheeses and breads and all sorts of stuff like that. A little sampling of a lot of different things. And that is what I'm going to do today, because a lot of what I have to talk about doesn't really warrant a full episode of anything. So I thought, well, I'm just going to do another one of my going down the list and knocking off a lot of topics that I need to address. Now, as we go along here, I just want you to know that if you want to find links to anything I'm talking about, you can find them in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/86. That's just the number 86 for the episode. I'll have a list of everything I'm talking about, and if I have a link to anything of interest, you'll find it there. Now, if you want to get a hold of me, if you have any show ideas or questions or just want to say hi, of course, I really want to hear from you. I've had several people write to me in the last couple of weeks, and it's been a lot of fun corresponding. So if you want to do that, you can send me an email right to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I get all those emails, I read them all, and I promise I will respond to every single email I get. So if you want to contact me, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, you can also find me hanging out at the Facebook page, facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast, or on Twitter at TKCpodcast. Now, before I get into any of the real content of the show today, I do have a big thank you I need to share. And if you listen to my most recent episode, the Herbs and Spices episode, I think in the intro, I was kind of lamenting the fact that I couldn't find one of my very, very all-time favorite Easter candies locally anymore. I don't know if they stopped making them or the stores just don't carry them or what, but they're the marshmallow eggs, where there's kind of a hard candy shell on the outside and kind of the chewy marshmallow on the inside. And I think I even said, if anyone knows where to get them, let me know. And lo and behold, friend of the show, Jen Milroy, who is one of the hosts of the Full of Fiber podcast, asked for my mailing address. And just a few days ago in the mail came a box all the way from Canada full of 4 bags of my very favorite all-time Easter candy, marshmallow eggs. Man, it was like a package from heaven. So Jen, totally stoked that you did that for me. It really means a lot. You also sent me some cool stickers and swag from your show. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. If any of you want to check out Jen's show, it's a fun family-oriented show where her husband, Chad, herself and their son get together and hang out and discuss family type things. So it's really a well done podcast. So I highly recommend you check it out. If you go to my show notes, I'll put a link to their show in it. But if you just Google Full of Fiber podcast, you'll find it. And please note the Canadian spelling of fiber, F-I-B-R-E. Anyway, Jen, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. I think I've been on a sugar high for literally the last 4 days. So really appreciate it. By the way, if anybody else feels like they would like to send me some interesting food that's maybe only available in their area, I'm always into taking samples that I can try and talk about on the show. So hit me up, send me an email if you've got something you think I should try. Okay, what else am I talking about in this episode? I said it's my smorgasbord episode, lots of things here. One, I want to talk about cauliflower crust pizza. I have a few thoughts on the Instant Pot multi-cooker. I have been thinking a lot about Blue Apron and the home delivery meal kit services that are like it. And finally, I've got a cookbook I want to talk a little bit about and offer a giveaway. So those are my topics. So here we go. Let's jump right into Smorgasbord for April 2017. All right, I'm going to apologize right up front. If you guys hear any purring or meowing, my cat has literally been pawing at my legs since I sat down to record this, and I have one hand that's petting her and trying to appease her without her jumping up into my lap and walking around on my laptop and brushing up against the microphone. So there's a nearby cat warning, just so you know. Okay, first up, let me talk for a second about this new craze that's out there. And maybe this isn't really a new craze, because I think the whole don't eat bread and the gluten-free thing has been going on for a while. But my sister's birthday dinner came along. We had a belated birthday dinner for her, and I told her I would make her anything she wanted to eat so she could pick what she wanted for a birthday dinner, and I would make it for her. And she chose a cauliflower crust pizza because she thought it sounded healthier and she's heard it's really good. And I have never tried it, so I thought, what the heck? It sounds like a good time. I'm always up for trying new things. So I searched around, checked out some recipes online. Most of them are quite similar, I would say. I ended up going with a recipe from the Damn Delicious blog, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, again, at kitchencounterpodcast.com/86, if you want to check it out yourself. So I bought a head of cauliflower. I followed directions. And basically, you put this cauliflower into a food processor and pulse it until it's almost the consistency of rice. It's about that, till it gets to that size and kind of crumbly texture. You throw it in a microwave-safe bowl, microwave it for 4 or 5 minutes until it gets soft, let it get cool, and then you basically put it into some cheesecloth and get as much of the water out of it as you can. There's a lot of moisture in there, so there's a lot of pressing it down, getting the water out. And then you combine it with some egg and stuff like that, and basically spread it on a piece of parchment paper, and that acts as your pizza crust. No dough, no flour, whatsoever. And probably, in retrospect, I might not have gotten quite all of the water out of it that I should have. But we basically made this crust, and then we put the toppings on it as we would a normal pizza, some sauce, cheese, some meat toppings, whatever it was. We each kind of made our own part of the pizza. And I have to say, not a big fan of cauliflower crust pizza. It didn't taste particularly strange, and it wasn't terrible, but it didn't crisp up. You couldn't really even lift it up after it was baked because the crust, it was just so, it held together, but it was like, imagine the softest, flimsiest crust pizza you've ever had. And it was like just one step below that. So it was really hard to eat. You really had to kind of use just a fork. And it was much less like a pizza and more like a breakfast, like a frittata or something. It wasn't bad, but it's not pizza. And at the end of the day, I really don't know, how much you gain health-wise. I say quote unquote health-wise by, switching out a regular dough crust pizza for a cauliflower crust. I mean, if you want pizza, eat pizza. Let's not reinvent something that's not really pizza and call it pizza just to satisfy our mental ideas and preconceived notions of what food should be. It reminded me too, I just saw a commercial the other day. I think it was for like some sort of a veggie chip. It was beet chips or something. If you've ever had veggie chips, let me put it this way. If you crave veggie chips and you like to eat veggie chips, more power to you. If you like to eat potato chips and crave potato chips and decide I'm going to be healthy and get veggie chips instead one day, don't even bother. You're going to be sorely disappointed. I've had several varieties just to try before. They're not potato chips. So if you're going into it with that mindset, it's just not going to work. Kind of like if it's not pizza, it's just not going to work as a pizza for me. So anyway, eat the pizza, get on with your life. But again, I'll put the recipe in the show notes if you want to check it out. But yeah, item number one, I would say, just skip the cauliflower crust pizza. All right. Next thing I want to talk about, and this will probably evolve into a full blown episode or two at some point down the road. So we know a few people that have an Instant Pot multi-cooker. And my wife had done some research and was kind of curious about it. And after a couple months of research and just kind of hemming and hawing over it, we decided to go ahead and buy one. Now, an Instant Pot, if you're not familiar with what this is, it's a multi-cooker. It does like 7 or 8 things. But primarily, It's a pressure cooker. It can act as a slow cooker. It can act as a rice cooker. It can steam vegetables. It can make yogurt. It can do all of this stuff. It looks kind of like, it looks kind of like a cross between a regular plug-in rice cooker that you'd buy, you know, at Walmart or something, and across that with something like the Russians might have tried to send into space in the 1960s. I mean, it's got a real kind of modern but not modern look to it. It's all digital. It's got all these buttons and stuff on it. But we have a traditional pressure cooker, like a really basic stovetop pressure cooker where, you know, you put the pot on an actual burner, clamp the lid down, and use it as a pressure cooker. And we thought, we don't use it much. And we thought, well, maybe we should try this Instant Pot because everyone we've talked to has had so much good luck with it. So we picked up one of those, and we've been having a lot of fun using it. So right off the bat, I would say if you've been thinking about getting one and it looks like something you might use, or if you've really been waiting to jump into the pressure cooking game, but you've just been kind of wary about, you know, pressure cooking in general, it seems kind of scary or difficult, I will say that the Instant Pot really simplifies it. It looks complicated when you look at an Instant Pot, but there's really not much to it when it comes to the pressure cooking. And we've been trying a lot of stuff in it, mostly things that would take a long time to cook, meat-based things like, roasts and that sort of stuff. But let me tell you, I am so surprised at what my favorite thing to make in the Instant Pot is. Not a really long cooking, difficult thing to make, but it's been so great. And it's one of the most delicious ways I've ever had chicken. We just take some boneless, skinless chicken breasts, put them in the Instant Pot, and then we pour in a jar of salsa verde, green salsa. And we pressure cook the chicken for like 20 minutes. And then shred it, and then we'll put it in tacos or maybe, you know, put them in rice bowls or something like that. It's fantastic. It's really, you know, pressure cooking chicken breasts like that, it really results in a flavorful and very, very moist chicken. You know, sometimes chicken breasts can get overdone and dried out, but the pressure cooking really does a chicken breast justice. It's really good. We've used that several times. We're experimenting with just chicken breasts and other, you know, sauces and liquids just to see, you know, what else works. But, you know, to give you an idea, if you were to take a pot roast, just like a beef pot roast, you might need to, you know, braise that for, you know, 3 hours at home or something like that. You know, you're cooking on a Sunday, you know, 3+ hours to get a really fork tender pot roast. In an Instant Pot, you know, the same thing might take an hour. Now, I'm not saying that's like a miraculous difference. It's not like, you know, I remember I was alive when microwaves first really became household appliances. And I remember the first time we got a microwave and it was like, oh my God, it can boil a cup of water in like a minute, you know, or something, 30 seconds or whatever it was. And it was kind of like mind blowing. So, I mean, this is a pressure cooker, the Instant Pot. It's not miraculous. But it turns out a really tasty dish in a fraction, really, of the time that it would ordinarily take you. We're going to be doing some more dried beans in the Instant Pot as well, and lentils. So there's a lot of things you can do with it that will really cut down the amount of time it takes to make something. And as I mentioned, it does multiple duties. So if you want to just do something via a slow cooker, it'll do that for you too. The only thing I would say is that I really enjoy the process of, you know, slow braising, and I really enjoy taking the dishes that take a long time to make that are maybe low effort, you know, set it and let it cook for a while. I really miss, you know, the house getting full of those wonderful aromas and just the idea that, you know, something in the oven is just kind of bubbling away over a period of time. It's going to result in something fantastic. So I kind of miss that process of cooking when it comes to the Instant Pot. But that being said, it's something I've used for a couple of months on and off now. I recommend it, again, if you're looking for a pressure cooker or some sort of a multi-cooker. I'll put a link to it in Amazon in the show notes if you're interested in taking a look. All right, third item I want to talk about in today's episode. this is something I've been thinking about for several weeks now, and I've been wanting to sit down and record something about it. And the problem is now I've really thought about it a lot. I've probably overthought about it as just kind of something that keeps popping into my mind, and I've mulled over it. It's probably going to come out incoherent now because I've really kind of jumbled it up in my own mind. I guess I've been noticing it, but this just kind of really clicked in my mind for some reason. It seems like lately I can't listen to a podcast and I can't get on the internet and, you know, read news or something without running across something that's to the effect of, don't try Blue Apron until you read this article, or I ordered Blue Apron and here's what happened. Or you'll hear a podcast host do an ad read for Blue Apron about how they never cook and they've got, you know, they tried Blue Apron and it was amazing. They turned out ahi tuna steaks and rice and, you know, whatever it is. You just hear about it a lot. And if you're not familiar with what Blue Apron is, it's essentially a meal kit that's delivered to your door. And you basically get a box with all of the ingredients and the recipes you would need to make whatever the meal is that they're delivering for. And you just get the portions that you need. So if they're sending you something to make, I can't even think of it, chicken cacciatore, you know, you'll get the raw chicken, like vacuum sealed on dry ice, and you'll get, you know, whatever herbs and spices you need. You'll get the produce, like, you know, the onion and the garlic. You'll probably get a little container of wine and a can of tomatoes, or, you know, whatever it is. You're going to get everything in exactly the right quantity and portions you need to make this dish. So what triggered me the other day is I read something like a headline, you know, clickbait, and I really thought, oh, wow, this is actually going to be something about Blue Apron that's not just a veiled advertisement. And I can't remember the headline, but I clicked on it and read it. And of course, it was just a veiled advertisement. You get through reading it and it was just gushing about how amazing it was. And here's their affiliate link and to click on it and order it. I have yet to find anything that even says anything remotely negative about Blue Apron. And not that I'm hunting. In full disclosure, I've never even tried Blue Apron. And I've never tried the other services that are out there. And I think there's some, like, there's one called HelloFresh and like Home Chef. And there's probably, I don't know, 10 others that I can't even think of. But Blue Apron is the one that's everywhere. So I've never even tried it. But here's the thing. I'm willing to grant several things for the purpose of this discussion. So first of all, I'm willing to grant that the food is delicious. I'm willing to accept that the recipes are probably easy for a novice and quick to make. I don't even know if I agree with these next two, but I'm willing to grant even this, that the price is reasonable and that delivering food like that, you know, from a distribution center to individual homes, it's efficient and it's good from an environmental standpoint. So even if I grant those four things, it's delicious, that they're easy and quick, the price is right, and that it's not a waste of resources to deliver food like that, I still have a problem conceptually with things like Blue Apron. And here's what I think. I hear a lot of folks who are interested in things like Blue Apron say something to the effect of, boy, I'd sure like to cook for my family, but quite frankly, I just don't have time. So something like a service like Blue Apron is really useful. And I get it. I don't cook at home as much as I'd like. I commute. I have an hour commute to work and an hour commute home from work. So I don't have a lot of time in the evenings when I want to cook. My wife, you know, cooks, of course, a lot. But to me, when I hear a statement like that, the not quite as understanding side of me just wants to kind of say, and this maybe sounds a little harsh, but I just kind of want to say, if you don't have time to prepare food for your family and it's something you really want to do, maybe it's time to reprioritize some things in life. You know, I know that sounds probably terrible. And if you're a Blue Apron user, I'd love to hear your ideas and your feedback on it. But let's break it down here. So there's really, when you're talking about home cooking, modern home cooking in the United States, there's really three major steps to home cooking that you generally have to do to make it work, right? One is that you have to research, and that's a relative new thing that home cooks have to do, because the variety available to us of food and recipes and ingredients is overwhelming. 100 years ago, you didn't have to research what you were going to make for dinner because chances are there was a very limited variety of things you could make for dinner based on locally available food, right? So it's not like, you know, people in the 1870s had to sit around and think, wow, should we make homemade pizza tonight or spaghetti or should we make tacos? Or, I mean, they didn't do that, right? They ate what they ate. I mean, they had a limited variety of things they could go for. But anyway, you have to research. You have to get the items. You have to get the ingredients. You have to procure all your ingredients to make the food. And then you have to prepare the food and cook it. So basically, those three things, if you look at a service like Blue Apron, it basically takes away two of those steps, right? It takes away the research and it takes away procuring the ingredients because they basically say, here's what you're going to make. Here's our recipe and here's all the stuff you need to make it. And they drop it on your doorstep. So all that's left for you, the home cook, is to make it and to prepare it. So in my mind, to me, those two steps, the research and the procurement, is where, half of the magic of home cooking comes from. You know, having a box of ingredients and a step-by-step list, you know, recipe in a box dropped on your doorstep, and you just basically show up after work, unpack it, unshrink wrap everything, and put it together like the recipe tells you, and eat it and enjoy it. It's kind of like, I almost don't understand the point. It's like, why don't you just go to a good quality restaurant and spend some time with your family, whether you eat in or do carry out, and just spend time with your family eating delicious food that was made for you. I don't really see much of a difference, to be honest with you, between that and getting a box of pre-prepared, pre-prepped ingredients with a recipe sent to your doorstep. And it removes, you know, kind of that connection that food has with our culture and our history. Like, can you imagine, you know, I think of all the wonderful food that my mom used to make, and it means a lot to me. And now I think, what if you take this to the logical conclusion? And what do you say? What if everybody just got a box of ingredients like Blue Apron would give you dropped on their doorstep for dinner, and but they still cooked it and they still ate it as a family? I mean, what do people say in 30 years? They go, wow, I really remember. I used to love it when, Blue Apron would deliver the chicken cacciatore, you know, once a month to us because those were my favorite meals. And doesn't that seem weird to anybody? I mean, it just seems really weird to me. It's like taking up a hobby like painting because you want to express your creativity. You want to make things that are beautiful and you want to appreciate your artistic side. You want other people to appreciate it. And all you end up doing is paint by number. I mean, it's really the same thing. Oh, look, I got a box today. Here's the four colors that I need. Here's the canvas and some paintbrushes. I just follow the directions and I've got a beautiful woodland scene. I know I'm coming off probably cynical and negative here, but it just seems like this is the first beginning step to something that could really start to separate the way we look at cooking and preparing food and providing for our family. It could really change the way we do that in, 20 or 30 years. And I know people probably said the same thing, 40 years ago or whatever it was when TV dinners were invented, and TV dinners didn't go on to, take over home cooking in America. But it's just this idea that our lives are so full and we just are so hungry for convenience without sacrificing the quality. You know, we want a lot from a little effort. And I just see things like these meal kit delivery services as just counterproductive to the home cooking, movement. I mean, to go back to reprioritizing time, I mean, what can you teach your kids about nutrition and healthy eating and the joy of creating food when it's just delivered to you in a box? And even if you can select what's delivered to you, I mean, what's the point of going online and clicking a few boxes and telling them what you want and, out of a pre-selected list, and then it just gets dropped onto your doorstep? I don't know. If you've tried it or a service like it, like Blue Apron, I would love to hear what you have to say about it. And I know it's not an all or nothing thing. It's not like you can't do Blue Apron a few times a month or whatever it is and still do whatever else you want to do, in the kitchen the other times. Anyway, I'd be curious to hear what you have to say. And so I know I mentioned right when I started this, that I've been thinking about this for a long time and I'm kind of rambling on as I thought I would, probably incoherently. But I'm interested to know what your thoughts are and what I've just said. Or again, if you're a user of these products, I'd love to hear what you have to say. If I can get my act together and think more coherently about it, maybe there's a dedicated episode to home delivery meal kits in the future. Okay, last item for this episode, I want to talk about a cookbook, and I want to do a cookbook giveaway. Now, what I'm going to talk about today was recommended by listener Jocelyn Wilson. A while back, I know I've been a little bit delinquent in episodes, but a while back I talked about doing some cookbook reviews and giveaways, and she recommended that I talk about Nerdy Nummies by Rosanna Pansino. So I have a copy of it right here in front of me. I've gone through it. I've read it. And I want to tell you, first of all, what a fun book this is, especially if you are of the nerdier slash geekier persuasion, or if you have kids, this cookbook is going to be awesome. Now, it's mostly about sweets. And as I mentioned, it's written by Rosanna Pansino. She also has a YouTube channel. In fact, that actually predates the cookbook, but it's called Nerdy Nummies. And what's really great about this cookbook, and what I really enjoyed about it, one, was that it had some really awesome ideas in it for just fun baked goods and sweets. But also, it's done in such a way that every recipe is nearly foolproof from like a step-by-step perspective. So not only does a recipe just list the ingredients, it'll list all of the steps and decoration steps, and it will have corresponding pictures associated with each step. So you can actually see what in the world you're supposed to be doing in order to get to the final product. And some of these dishes are incredible. So for example, it's divided into six sections. Chapter one is math and science. Chapter two is space. Three is fantasy and sci-fi. Four is gaming. Five is tech and web. And chapter six is geeky treats. So for example, in the math and science section, she'll show you how to make atom cookies or petri dish jellies. Just, they look amazing and they're very clever. Some of my favorites. In the gaming section, she'll show you how to make video game controller cookies or a chocolate chess cake with actual chess pieces or a zombie brain cake, which looks totally disgusting but awesome. UFO cake pops, robot cake pops, Loch Ness monster cupcakes. I mean, it is full of some really, really neat stuff. I haven't seen a cookbook like this in quite some time, so I think it's really cool. I'll put a link to it in the show notes so you can head over and look at what it is. But if you want to win a copy of the Nerdy Nummies cookbook by Rosanna Pansino, it's really easy. Here is all you have to do. You either have to send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com or send me a message on Facebook, facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. Tell me what your favorite dessert is, and then I'll enter you into a drawing for the book. But you have to do that either through Facebook or through email by April 22nd, 2017. If you get that in before April 22nd, I will put your name in a drawing for the cookbook. If you win, I'll get a hold of you. You can give me your mailing address and I'll get this in the post to you. So that is the cookbook giveaway for this episode, Nerdy Nummies by Rosanna Pansino. Thanks, Jocelyn Wilson, for the recommendation. Really, really enjoyed it. All right, folks, that does it for this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Hope you were okay with me taking this bit by bit today and hitting on a few things in this smorgasbord episode. And I hope my somewhat of a rant about Blue Apron wasn't totally off-putting. I don't know, something about it just doesn't sit quite right with me. But maybe I just need to try it for myself to find out what exactly it's all about. If you have any tips about it, send them my way. All right, folks, that is going to do it for today's episode. Once again, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to sit and listen to what I have to say about food and cooking. But you know what? Like I said, I want to hear from you. Feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Send me a note, even if it's just to say hi. I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, if you feel like it and if you get any value out of this podcast, please tell your friends and your family about it, and tell them if they're not familiar with how to listen to a podcast, where you find it, on iTunes or Stitcher or your Android phone or whatever. All right, folks, thanks so much. This is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Until next time, happy cooking.